Hey everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 16 of the Art Scene Podcast. But before I introduce this week's guest, I want to remind listeners about an upcoming show titled Imago, which opens on April 8th at the City Limits Gallery in Oakland. It features new work by Luca Antonucci, the co-founder of Copa Press and the SF Art Book Fair, who was previously a guest on the podcast. Okay. So this week's guest is Amanda Noodleman, a former photography classmate of mine at the University of San Diego. Since our undergrad days, Amanda has since moved to San Francisco, worked at a tech company, and has now recently gone back to school to get a master's in curatorial practice. Today we briefly talked about her time working for a tech company and what motivated her to go back to school. But mostly we talked about the exhibition she curated with the rest of her curatorial practice class at the California College of the Arts, titled Black Light. The exhibition, which is currently showing at the Wattis Institute for Contemporary Arts, converts the gallery space into a forum for conversation and exchange, taking form as a series of events that addresses the relationship between cultural institutions and Black artists. But that's all I'll say for now. I'll let Amanda talk more in detail about it in our conversation. All right. Thank you for coming on to the podcast. Sure. I'm really excited about this one because, one, it gives me a chance to reconnect with you because, so our listeners know, me and Amanda went to school together.
Yes.
And by the way, it's kind of weird calling you Amanda because even in school, in class, I just referred to you as your last name, like Noodleman.
Yes.
Everybody just like, oh, Noodleman's coming in.
That's still the case.
Yeah.
not in the art, my like new art life. That's not so much what's happening, but still other people. It's still Noodles.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can just call me that if you'd like.
Just still a play on your last name. And now you live here in San Francisco, and I think mm-hmm. you came up a few months before I came up. But now we were in the art program at USD as undergrads. Mm-hmm. And now you're in your second year of graduate school over at CCA. So the first thing I always wanted to know was what brought you up here to San Francisco? Well, and I guess actually, you know what, where are you originally from? Because you're not from San Diego, right?
No.
Okay.
So I'm originally from Arizona.
Okay.
I was set on leaving as soon as I graduated high school. So I wanted to go to California, and I chose University of San Diego and moved there as soon as I possibly could. And then I got, I graduated with a degree in visual art and photography, and I wanted to stay in California, but I wanted to live somewhere a bit more urban, and
yeah.
I felt like Los Angeles was too similar to San Diego.
Which, by the way, as a San Diegan, that is not true.
Now I know. I know now. But I had, when I lived in San Diego while I was there for college, I only went to Los Angeles once.
Right.
On a school field trip. So
right.
It wasn't even maybe a proper experience. So, yes, in retrospect, I realize this isn't true and I don't mean to insult
it's okay.
either city.
It's okay. You're not from there. It's
no,
all right.
There's no way for me to know.
Right.
So I decided that I wanted to move to San Francisco as like my urban alternative. And while I was in school, sorry,
I just spilled water all over myself and I distracted her.
I tried to hold it together.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And it's all over my pants. But go on.
Okay. So, while I was in school at USD, I was working part-time at the Apple Store, and I decided that I wanted to move to San Francisco. I wanted to try to get a job in art. I think I actually initially, when I first moved here, interviewed or tried to get an interview at the Frankel Gallery.
I've been there and done that.
Yeah, it didn't work out, which is fine. I didn't really have that much experience, so
right.
I can understand in retrospect why they wouldn't want to hire me. But I ended up being able to transfer to the Apple Store downtown in San Francisco through somebody that I had known in San Diego.
So you went the smart route. You already took advantage of a job you already had to get you here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The only thing that happened, though, is that I then continued to work there for another 2.5 or 3 years. Which, because it was a really fun job,
yeah.
I sort of moved up the ranks, became a genius, and did that for a while. And
please tell me that's on your resume.
Oh, of course.
Well, 2 years course. As a 2 years as a genius.
Yeah, you don't work at the Apple Store for 4 years and not put genius on your resume.
Right.
So then I decided that I wanted to not work at the Apple store anymore. And so I ended up getting a job in tech. And since my skills at that point were in customer service and support and that kind of thing, I ended up getting a job in customer support for a tech company called Discuss. I worked there for 4 years.
Yeah.
And which was a great place until I wanted to do something different. And at that point, it felt like a real crossroads for me.
Right. Well, so when you were in school, I mean, you majored in photography. Mm-hmm. Originally, when you did that, did you intend on to like being in the arts? Like, did you always want to have a career in the arts eventually?
Yes. But I also didn't know if it was a viable choice.
Sure.
Right. So
also been there, done that. Yeah.
You know, I started as an accounting major, which I was pretty good at. My dad really liked that. I broke his heart when I told him I wanted to switch to an art degree. But, you know, I took a GE class with Sarah Doherty, Foundations in Form class, and I had a conversation with her and told her I loved that class and how much I loved art, which I didn't, you know, really know before.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, it is possible to have a career in art. You just have to choose to do it. So, you know, when I graduated, I did want to work in art, and that was really kind of the dream. I graduated in the end of 2009, and things were difficult for lots of people at that time. And with the kind of little experience that I had, it took me a while to find a job. And then I just sort of stopped looking for an art job.
Did you stick to doing making photography? Sorry, let me rephrase that.
Louis is a photographer just as a note.
Right. And the reason why I'm asking you this question is because I wonder if you had the similar experience I did. But when you graduated, you moved up here, worked for Apple, and then eventually Discuss. Were you still trying to make art?
It became clear to me fairly soon after graduating that I didn't necessarily want to work as an artist. I did very much want to work in art. I didn't really know in what capacity at that point. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I didn't really have the sort of urgency to make work or to pursue a life as an artist. And I did continue to make photographs while I lived here. I still was using my, you know, trusty Olympus OM-1 shoot 35mm. And, you know, I did a lot of that. But it was more like kind of casual portraiture and just kind of documenting my life rather than pursuing any particular sort of artistic project. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of went down that route too. Yeah. Like Steph always asked me to bring the camera.
Right, exactly.
You take really good pictures. I know I take really good pictures.
But
it's not art. Why do it? But now I'm just take pictures on vacation.
Right. Yeah. Yes, designated. Actually, when I worked at Discuss, I gave I taught a class on how to take really great iPhone photos.
That's
this
great.
This is the like manifestation of my art degree in photography.
Those 4 years, this is what it came
exactly.
down to.
People really loved the class.
Right. Isn't that funny when you see those Apple ads for like how you can take amazing pictures with an iPhone?
Yes.
A little bit in me is kind of like, great, now everybody can do this?
Yeah, man. All of our skills have been totally replaced by the iPhone. I see it happen.
Well, tell me a little bit more about how it was working for Discuss. Because you worked for 4 years.
Yeah. So kind of with the same experience that I had working at Apple, like I was always trying to kind of move ahead and try to make new positions for myself. I certainly didn't want to work in customer support anymore. Like I left Apple because I didn't want to work in support or retail anymore. And then, my kind of transferable skills were in support. So working there, you know, I worked with some really smart and amazing people. And at that time, it was a really great place to work. And, you know, working in tech is like a pretty cushy thing. It's really easy to keep doing that. And so, you know, I ended up being able to work with the company to create a new position on the marketing team. And so I was running some digital marketing things and also then helped to launch some online communities and worked with them to release some new products around making your own communities online. And I had a really great boss that, I had a lot of fun working with, and we had a little team that was super great. But then it kind of came to a point where, as I mentioned earlier, that I came to this crossroads where it was like, you know, I could really make a career for myself working in marketing for whatever tech company doing this kind of same thing. And I would probably be really good at it. And but is that something that I want to continue to do? And the answer to that question ended up being a pretty resounding no. And at that point, it became clear to me that I wanted to return to art. And so I took some time to do some research and figure out how it was that I was going to do that. And I decided that graduate school felt like a really good option for me.
Yeah.
And in addition to graduate school, that I wanted to work in the curatorial field. So I set to work trying to figure that out.
Well, tell me, how did you learn about this? Is like, a, you know, curatorial practice was a direction that you could do and wanted to do? Because, like, you know, for me, I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to be a photographer. Originally, I applied for MFA programs, sure. Didn't get in. And I think at one point I said, well, how do I put on exhibits? And then I just went down a rabbit hole on the internet and figuring it out, right? Like, through what degree programs, like, you know, do I go into? But how did you get there?
Yeah, I mean, there was a similar moment of going down an internet rabbit hole, but it was kind of the same thing. I started with it, like, MFA programs, and then started to look at other programs that those schools offered. I was like looking at MICA and looking at their MFA programs, and then realized that they had a sort of curatorial program there. And then that kind of put me onto a track of realizing that this might be an option. And so I did some more research about, I mean, at that point I didn't really even know what a curator did, right, to be totally frank. Right. So I just did some work thinking about, you know, if that would be a good fit for me. And in a lot of ways, the kind of position that a curator holds in the art field really was an ideal fit for me in terms of still being able to work with artists, which I really love, and being able to apply my background with artistic training to the role of a curator, and that kind of fundamental understanding that can breed. And I also like the sort of more critical or theoretical thinking that a curator gets to do in terms of research for an exhibition or for writing. And those were things that I wanted to pursue. And I realized that I wanted to work in a capacity to support artists rather than producing work on my own.
Yeah. Were you, you know, even before grad school, when up here in San Francisco, were you still checking out the art galleries, still trying to stay in touch with, you know, the art community and the art world and trying to see what's new, what's going on? Or was this something where you had a transition out of the tech world and immerse yourself back into the art world when you started school?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was certainly going to museums. And then, although for a while I was living here, like SF MoMA and Berkeley both closed.
Oh yeah. What bad timing.
Yeah. But you know, I was going to major museums, but I wasn't going to a lot of galleries. I would sometimes go to Frankel, and I would go to some of these other kind of places that I knew about, but I wasn't super active. Right. I kind of immersed myself in the tech world, which in San Francisco, as if other people live here, know is quite pervasive. So it's very easy, you know, to just be really, to make that your life. And that is certainly what I did. I mean, as I realized that I wanted to return to art, I certainly made a greater effort to start to get more familiar with what was happening here locally.
Right.
But for the most part, I was doing the tech thing for sure.
Well, so what made you choose CCA? Because, you know, the other one obviously is SFAI.
Right.
I think Mills has one. Right. Berkeley obviously has a program. I think USF now has a program right around the time you're applying.
Yeah.
But what made you choose CCA?
Well, I actually applied to a few different programs around the country, not just at not just locally here in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
But
what were you looking at?
The other places I did apply to Bard, and I applied to Williams College, which isn't exactly a curatorial program, but had a really interesting art history program, which still, like, their program looks really amazing. But in retrospect, I'm not sure that an art history master's degree would have been a good fit anyway. So I am happy that I ended up at CCA, and, you know, a big part of that program is our chair, like, was a really big draw, Lee Markopoulos. She's like a totally brilliant woman, and it's really difficult to say no when she says, do you want to be part of this program? I'd love to have you. And she's a person that makes you want to say yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the sort of focus of the program and the opportunity to get to curate this sort of large scale, well, at the time, it seemed like a large scale exhibition at the Wattis. It's a really great opportunity, and the sort of focus, the balance of practical and theoretical knowledge that the program offered was a draw for me. And also, I did like the idea of staying in California.
Yeah. And the same city.
Right.
Don't have to go too far.
It made it an easy choice.
Did you take the plunge like I did, where you quit your job, full time job, and go full time to school?
Yep. Yep.
How was that?
Glorious.
Does it feel a little cool?
Like you're yeah, like, I don't I have felt to go like to work. A little badass. I mean, it also is really stressful in some ways. We're, you know, living on financial aid.
Yeah.
But I also have been lucky, like when I need support, my family is able to give it.
Yeah. That helps a lot.
Yes. So it's been slightly less stressful maybe than it would have, although obviously there are moments always when things get hairy. But yeah, it was a really great opportunity to totally immerse myself in school, which was something that I was really looking forward to returning to graduate school, and was part of the reason why I chose to go to school rather than trying to apply for like assistant jobs or kind of like low level positions as in galleries or museums. I really wanted to get that, some of that theoretical knowledge that I didn't get in undergrad, since I wasn't able to pursue an art degree there for a full 4 years.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to be in an academic setting, and that was like a really glorious thing to be able to do.
How did that feel to go, like, be in a classroom again and learn?
Great. Great.
I mean, that was the biggest thing for me after, like, I took 3 years off working and then went back to school, and I was like, I miss learning. Like, I miss reading.
Yes.
And writing.
Yes. And yeah, and that was like, you know, I was still like a really avid reader after leaving school, and I did some of my own writing, but none of it in the sort of same critical vein that school asks you to do. And I just really reveled in sitting in a classroom and talking to my classmates for 3 hours and trying to really dig into readings that we had done, or sort of hypothesizing about what we saw the curatorial field to be and all of those things. Of course, it's not all rainbows and daisies. Obviously, grad school never is.
There's all those all-nighters when you're writing papers, that part of it. Yeah.
You know, and spending that much time with a small group of people sometimes creates friction. But I've also been super lucky with my cohort. We have actually have developed really great relationships. Which I don't think is always the case.
Yeah. It can be a little competitive sometimes.
Yes.
For no reason. It's not like we're all doing the same thing.
Right.
Everybody has like a different goal. But you know, like everybody has a different goal. I think this, when I was in school, I think this was one thing me and a few of my classmates, you know, figured out was, yeah, we're all in the museum studies program, but you want to go into marketing, or you want to own your own gallery. I want to be a curator. Right. You want to be in public programming. Like we're all using our degree for different purposes, but yeah, it can be a little competitive sometimes. And I never understood that.
Yeah. And that's funny because that's actually, you know, that's a conversation we actually had with one of our professors one time about how we were all competing with each other to get the same jobs. And like, we had to kind of think about it that way in some sense. And we disagreed. And in part, it's because there are only 5 people in my program, including me. And we all are very distinct, like you said, in our, you know, I do think that, I don't think everyone wants to be a curator, but, even so, our interests vary quite broadly.
Right. Yeah.
So there is like a real sense of, collaboration and support, which is really nice and refreshing, because I don't think that, like I said, that's always the case for these cohorts. But
well, tell me what topic did you decide to focus on while in school? Let's talk about that, because that would just explain what you just spent the last 2 years reading about the most.
Yeah, well, the thing is that has been challenging for me is that because my experience is limited in some ways in working in art and sort of my exposure to the greater art world in general, is that I was and have been really voracious to learn and to think about lots of different aspects of the art world across lots of subjects and practices. So it has taken me most of the time that I've been in school to kind of settle on something to think about. And in some ways, I'm not like 100% satisfied, although I'm super interested, you know, in what I've chosen, but I'm super interested in it. But there's a lot of ways in which I want to think about everything at once, which that's not a good way to write a thesis.
I love all this information, right? And I want to share it with you.
Everything.
Yeah.
That doesn't go over very well. So what I am writing about, which in some sense I've come to because of my experience working in tech and working with online communities, is thinking about, broadly thinking about cyberfeminism, which is a movement that came up in the early 1990s and kind of saw its peak in the late 90s and sort of disappeared around the time of the dot-com bubble after 2000. And I'm looking at something pretty particular, which is the first Cyber Feminist International,
yeah,
which was a gathering that happened at Documenta 10 in 1997.
Wow.
In this sort of ancillary venue that was called the Hybrid Workspace. It's a little bit trying to uncover this sort of narrative of this feminist gathering and its position both within the context of the art world in the 90s and also its position within the hybrid workspace and how that was contextualized within Documenta 10 more broadly, which was a pretty heavily criticized edition of Documenta 10. It was the first Documenta to be curated by a woman and was very much based in discourse rather than object. Basically, I'm interested in the relationship of cyberfeminism and its sort of history briefly, but then how that came to manifest at one of the, you know, most prestigious art events in the world and what it meant for a group of women whose primary goal in a lot of ways was to subvert power structures and what it meant for them to be at a place like Documenta, what it meant for them to be part of an exhibition that was the first to be curated by a woman and sort of the context of globalism and the rising pervasiveness of technology and people getting more access to the internet, and then what it meant for them to be in this kind of experimental laboratory that was called, like I said, the hybrid workspace. And so it's this kind of question about what it means, like the kind of importance of the physical space in which someone gathers and what that context can mean for their artistic practice and kind of what transpired there.
So then I have to ask, you mentioned earlier about being a curator. Do you have anything specific you plan on doing with this degree? Like generally being a curator, but is there a certain type of museum you're interested in? A certain type of art you're interested in curating? Do you even want to be at an art museum or like another institution?
Yeah, I think that I'm less drawn to the idea of working in a large institution. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to work in a smaller space, whether that's a gallery or a more Kunsthalle model that is a bit more experimental or a bit more flexible in its programming. Interested perhaps in doing public programming or working in performance. Of course, I still love art objects. I think, I've been pretty heavily influenced by the exhibition that we're working on as a group for our program,
yeah,
which is pretty much, it's very much focused on producing events,
yeah,
which can be very stressful working with people. It can be a lot more uncertain than working with objects. However, I've taken a lot of pleasure in it, and I think that that's definitely something that I would be interested in pursuing. I'm very open to moving or staying. I think it's important for me to get some experience. I think I'm definitely interested in working in a contemporary institution that is probably a bit more fast paced than a more traditional museum.
Yeah.
And will allow me a bit of flexibility in the kind of programming that I get to do.
Well, let's talk about the show that you're working on right now, which is part of the curatorial practice program.
Right.
It's called Black Light. So tell me about how this came to be.
Yeah. So Black Light is kind of it's kind of an interesting model, the way that these exhibitions come to be as part of this program, because basically somebody comes up with an idea and then everybody has to agree to pursue that idea.
And this is like a requirement for the program, right?
Right.
To graduate.
Yes. Yeah. So the requirements to graduate are two pronged. One, you have to write a master's thesis, and then you also have to produce this thesis exhibition in collaboration with your cohort. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult process, but Black Light is the sort of product of a few things, which is that we wanted to work with living artists. We wanted to collaborate rather than solely focus on curating objects. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to think about something that was really timely and also something that could exist both within and outside of the gallery. And so that kind of gave rise to Black Light, which is essentially transforms the gallery space into a meeting space rather than a collection of objects, and is really an events-based exhibition.
Mm-hmm. And, tell me, I went to the opening.
Yes.
So I went to the opening, which was great. I saw the first performance. Mm-hmm. They were reciting poetry, but it was a lot more performative than just standing there and reading in front of people,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome. And I read up on it a little bit on the different organizations they included. So tell me about all the different people that you've collaborated with for this show.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I talked just now a little bit about the form of the exhibition, but the subject matter of the exhibition focuses on the relationship between cultural institutions and Black artists. And the way that we went about doing this was choosing five organizations, which we in some ways conceive of institutions, but certainly don't necessarily fall under that kind of traditional category. But it's the ways in which artists use their own practice to critique institutions or try to affect change on institutions. And that has manifested in a whole variety of ways across history and in contemporarily. So the way that we went about doing this was, like I said, choosing these five organizations to look at, which are the Underground Museum in Los Angeles, the Brockman Gallery, which operated in Los Angeles from 1967 to 1989. We're looking at the Black Artist Retreat that's based out of Chicago, Black Women Artists for Black Lives Matter, which is based in New York City, and also Community Futures Lab, which is run out of Philadelphia. And so the idea has been to collaborate with founders or founding members of these organizations to think about how their practices can reconceptualize the way that institutions work, and how they kind of deal with this sort of fraught relationship between space and power.
Mm-hmm.
And the physical space that institutions occupy, and the sort of space that they occupy both, like I said, physically, but also in a sort of conceptual landscape, historically hasn't always had a good track record in terms of its relationship with artists of color in our particular focus, Black artists. So the idea has been to collaborate with them and bring artists directly into conversation with audiences at the gallery. And that is through a variety of different types of events that, kind of manifest as performances or discussions or workshops or creating space for remembrance. They kind of come up along a few different themes.
What made you as a group decide that you wanted to focus on Black art movements and Black, like, historically Black art galleries and all over this country? Like, what did you guys know about these, like, through your studies during grad school, or was this something you guys had to go research for the show?
Yeah, so the idea came up kind of out of a different but related proposal, but it certainly was something that the group as a whole was interested in, the relationships between institutions and artists, And we also had been thinking a lot about how the histories of institutions don't attend all of the time to all of the narratives and all of the histories that exist in the United States. And, you know, there is a sort of also political urgency that has kind of come to the fore over the last few years.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is not a new phenomenon for Black communities, but certainly it's something that has risen to national attention. So there were things, too, that we were identifying within Black artist-run spaces and organizations and artistic practices that we thought was a really sort of compelling thing to try to highlight and draw connections between. So there was an idea that there was something interesting and particular happening with the way that Black artists were trying to reconceptualize what an institution could be and different ways that they could influence them with artistic practice.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of like the main focus is like, in what ways can an artistic practice become a tool for change?
Yeah. Well, you know, the coolest thing about this exhibit that you guys are doing is, even though it's technically just a student exhibit, right? Because it's out of a grad program. It's not at the YBCA. It's not at, you know, all these other different places here in the Bay Area. But, you know, I had never even heard of any of these galleries or these movements until the show. And it made me want to research a little bit more on the history of them. And I think that's the coolest thing is that you guys are, you know, people can go to the show. It's open to the public.
Right.
And you guys are like showing something, a part of art history that I think is overlooked. And I think that's great. And you guys like a whole series of events, right, going on. Like, for how long?
Yeah, we have because, you know, in our conception, the exhibition, the content of the exhibition really is are the events that make up the sort of content of the exhibition. And, you know, I would also be remiss in saying and not mentioning the fact that we do have a painting, a single work of art in the gallery space, which is a large abstract painting by the artist Rodney McMillan, who's based out of L.A., and it really is meant to serve as like a backdrop and provocation for all of the events that take place in the space. So I think I kind of mentioned at the beginning that the gallery is designed as a meeting space with sort of amphitheater seating. But to answer your question, yeah, these events run for the entire course of the 2-month exhibition. And the event that you attended was the opening night, which we had 3 different performances, which were really fantastic. I mean, I'm a little bit biased, perhaps, but we got to work with some really incredible artists to kind of kick off the show. And the exhibition is going to see a number of events coming up over the next 2 months.
And I think I remember reading somewhere that you guys are actually publishing something, right? Or you guys are printing a catalog to go along with the show.
Yeah. Part of putting together an exhibition for this program is to also publish an accompanying catalog. It's a bit delayed, but it'll be coming out after the exhibition closes. So we're working on that right now, and that's going to feature interviews with representatives from all 5 of these organizations that I mentioned previously, along with some original research and writing on Rodney McMillan's work, and some writing by a couple other curators. It's also going to contain a commissioned artwork from Robin Hillman Harrigan, who's a member of Black Women Artists for Black Lives Matter, and also going to be participating in an event in April. She's going to be in discussion with Jackie Francis, who's a local art historian and, you know, works at CCA and also is a curator in her own right and has an exhibition that might have just closed or is closing at the Museum of African Diaspora, which was really great.
Yeah. Well, tell me, what is the feedback you've gotten from the participants, from the collaborators, all these artists that you've collaborated with for this show? Because I think, you know, mentioned there's one place out of Philadelphia. So when they get the phone call from someone at grad school in San Francisco, they're probably like, what? You've heard of us? Like, I mean, how was that? Like talking to all of them and getting them involved and like how receptive were they? And
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do want to make clear that although a lot of people haven't heard of these institutions or aren't as aware that in the communities within which they operate,
right.
They are certainly very important venues, and they and even in a broader context. And while, you know, we have gotten feedback from people that we know that they aren't familiar with these places, they certainly are very powerful and impactful in what they do and whom they serve, which is kind of part of what we're trying to address in some way as well, is that there is a real need for these places to exist, and that they have like a really important purpose. But, you know, the feedback has been great. I mean, there are people that have that are busier than others and are harder to pin down. But for the most part, people seem to be really excited to work on the project and think it's important in a lot of ways, and have been really supportive, and are excited to be coming out to participate. In some senses, it's difficult to say like what the feedback is exactly, since
were you still in the first week too, on top of
that? Right. Well, and the feedback in terms of like most, like the events with all of these founders or co-founders haven't happened yet. Right. So like the real opportunity to get them in conversation here, besides the interviews that we've conducted over the phone or over Skype or email, you know, the real like meat of what we're doing together hasn't happened yet. For most of these people.
You mentioned earlier about kind of how timely too, putting on an exhibition like this is.
Sure.
You know, I think the big one I've been reading about the most is the Whitney. I don't know if you know.
Yes.
Right. You know, there's two different things. There's basically an influx of more artists submitting work to the Whitney Biennial, basically addresses a lot of the political issues, contemporary social issues, a lot of the Black Matters Lives movement. And of course, there's the praise that more work like that is being shown at the Whitney.
Right.
But then there's also like, you know, people talking about white artists painting or doing work that addresses right. Black issues. And of course, that's rubbed certain people the wrong way. But, you know, your work, this exhibit, I mean, if anything, it fits not that it's the Whitney Biennial.
Sure.
But do you feel like this is kind of the same thing? This is something coming out of, you know, something new that's going to happen. We're going to see in the next couple years, you know, like this is what's going to be happening. We're going to start seeing more the issues that are currently happening today being more and more addressed in the artwork in the next couple years.
Well,
or these topics more than
sure.
More
than I mean, I think there's like a few things to your question here. One is, I mean, my hope is that we continue to see contemporary issues reflected in art institutions. It's kind of part of the question that we're trying to ask with Blacklight, and that experiences that are being, you know, expressed or trying to be advocated for in movements like the Black Lives Matter movement, that's a reflection of a lot of this country's everyday lives. And, you know, those institutions like art museums are supposed to be a reflection of culture in the United States.
Yeah.
And it should address the experiences of all people. And, you know, and also I think that there really should be a renewed focus on those that have been historically marginalized in a lot of ways, or overlooked or erased or appropriated for the means of that institution. And I think that that's like a question that you see being grappled with at the Whitney right now is, you know, whose story is this to tell? And I think rightly it, you know, it probably isn't Dana Schutz's story to tell, right?
Right.
Like that is, and I, you know, I've seen her response and seen the way that she has tried to defend her position, and I can't get behind it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, it's an ongoing thing, and I can't say, and I, you know, I've personally made mistakes in the conception and the execution of this exhibition,
right.
our exhibition Blacklight, and it is certainly a learning process, but you know, it's something that needs to be grappled with.
Right.
Certainly.
Well, I mean, it's weird that you think you made a mistake. I don't see the mistake. What is great about your show is that you've basically curated a space for representatives from these different organizations, and they themselves are given the platform. I feel like you gave them the platform to tell their story.
Yeah, I mean, there is, and when I'm referencing some things sort of in particular, and these are just sort of my own personal growing pains, and you can spend, and what I'm referring to and saying that I made mistakes is that you can spend a lot of time thinking about something as complex as race and art and space in America, in the United States, and think that you know a lot about it, and then be proven, you know, and then, and then realize that you still have a lot to learn. And I certainly do as well. And I've been lucky enough to be collaborating with artists who are generous and vulnerable enough and humble enough to work with me on that. And, you know, that's my own work that I need to do. And I just have been really lucky to work with people like Robin, and to work with people like Indira Allegra, who was a performer at our opening event, who have given me feedback in very generous ways. And I'm very thankful for that. And I think that that too, this exhibition is coming from a point of trying to be open and a kind of point of inquiry, and also a real desire to allow artists to speak for themselves in a lot of ways. And, you know, none of the curators in our group are Black. So there are, you know, a lot of questions about our own positionality in trying to produce this show. And so I know that we have tried, we've done a lot of work to be humble in our approach, and that doesn't always go well. But like I said, the artists that we've been working with have been incredibly generous, and the idea really was to let them speak for themselves and not try to mediate an experience that, while we can maybe empathize with it, it is difficult for us to know truly for ourselves.
Well, it was definitely a refreshing experience for me. I mean, I didn't know what to expect when I went to the opening, and I think I just assumed, you know, in my mindset, I'm so used to it, just a gallery space, seeing a bunch of work on the wall and mingle with people whose work is on the wall. And it wasn't. It was completely different. I loved it. I mean, it was so... It was kind of participatory. It was a lot of, it was very performance. It was great. I mean, it was, I think for me, it was, it felt like an art gallery, but it was all like physical and oral art that I was seeing, not so much physical and two-dimensional work hanging up on the wall. Right. And I think, you know, the way you guys set up that place made it so intimate, and a very intimate environment.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I, you know, and that, that's partly been the idea of how we conceived it, and it was impossible to know if that was going to work before we actually got people in the space. But I think it actually, you know, we've only had this one event so far, but for me it was a great success. And I think partly too, what I've been really proud of or really excited to see just after this one event is also that, in addition to creating the space for intimacy or conversation or dialogue, it also in some sense is creating a space for discomfort. You know, it's a complex subject, and it's difficult for lots of people to approach. It's not always going to be comfortable to have those conversations. I also think, you know, it reflects people's own discomfort back onto them. I'm hoping asks them why they feel uncomfortable, and then potentially like what they can do about that discomfort. So the performances, I thought the opening night were very successful and did lots of different and really interesting things.
I think, and you know, that you mentioned that uncomfortableness. I was going to leave.
Right.
Because in my, most of my experience at being an art gallery, and I'm hearing, oh, there's going to be a performance piece, I'm like, I'm out. Like, I got to leave now, because I'm always afraid they involve the crowd, you know, the guests, and I'm like... And you were like, no, it's going to happen like 5 minutes. I'm like, all right. So I said, but, you know, and at first, you know, when the first performer came out and started speaking, I had that, it's that instant reaction of, I feel a little uncomfortable. I don't want to be here. And then as it just, you know, for me, I think it's like, just stick through it. It'll feel uncomfortable, but then it like, it's like on a roller coaster, right? Like, it's scary. And then once you go down that first loop, you're fine. And the more I stayed and the more I started hearing them, and the more I thought it was so cool because they're, you know, the performers are hidden in the crowd.
Right.
So they started popping out one after another, and all of a sudden it was like, well, this is really cool. And it's already uncomfortable, I think, for anybody who goes to a performance art show And I think, too, the topic that they're addressing, I mean, and really the topic of that the whole exhibit is talking about is also an uncomfortable topic. But what better way to do it than just like, I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable, but if you stick through it, it's going to be fine. You're going to learn something.
Yeah. And I hope that that's the case. And I think, too, that there's something interesting in the promise of it maybe not being okay. Right.
Like, right.
That too is something that I think is a reality for, you know, a lot of the artists that are involved. And I think it was a kind of refreshing experience to be able to see them inhabit the work that they were producing, and then to get to, because this first performance that you're referring to was like a griot style reading, mm-hmm. where four women were talking about their relationship in different kinds of ways with institutions and the space that those institutions either give or don't give to them, and the sort of labor of maintaining blackness within an institution. Yeah. And those are the words of Dashara Suggs Joe, who's one of the performers, or one of the poets that participated in this reading, and the other women, Aaliyah and Nguzi and Sierra Gervais, were really incredible, and they kind of addressed these issues or these concerns both from really contemporary times to like things that are happening right now for some of them in their graduate programs, and then also historically as well. And the idea is to activate that space in a new way, to kind of try to insert that conversation and make it visible in a way that is discomfiting in some ways, but also one that makes it more easy to receive, or maybe not easy to receive, but by upending the sort of like spatial configuration of the room, makes new space for that conversation to be heard potentially in a different way.
Sure. What's coming up soon for the show?
Yes. Our next event is next week on March 30th. And that's a conversation between Dale Brockman Davis, who's the co-founder of the Brockman Gallery, one of the five organizations that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in conversation with Dwayne Dutterville, who is a local art historian. And they're going to be talking about the sort of overlapping history of Black artist-run spaces, both in Los Angeles and Oakland. Like I mentioned before, the Brockman Gallery operated from 1967 to 1989 in Lamert Park in Los Angeles. And so Dale will be talking a little bit about the history of spaces in LA, and in particular, the Brockman Gallery. And Dwayne wrote a book about Black artists and Black artist-run spaces in Oakland. And so they're going to be talking a little bit about those histories, and they'll be in conversation with one of the curators from our group, Megan Franz.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how long is the show going on till again? What's the last day?
It closes May 14th.
Okay.
But in between, like where there are going to be events with all right. of these other organizations, like I mentioned previously, Robin Hillman Harrigan of Black Women Artists for Black Lives Matter is going to be in conversation with Jacqueline Francis. Rashida Phillips from the Community Futures Lab is going to be giving a performative workshop that deals with ideas of Afrofuturism. And Karan Davis is going to be curating an event in April that in some way transforms the gallery space into one of remembrance and a kind of space for holding loss, which has a kind of particular connection to the Underground Museum, and also some recent events in our own group.
Yeah.
And all of that information is on the WADIS website and also on our Facebook page. Cool. So those are going to be all coming up along with some other kind of hosted spaces for students and other local arts organizations.
Cool. Aside from the actual, all these wonderful people you've got to meet during the show and all the different organizations that you've learned about, mm-hmm. what you think is the one big thing that you got out of this experience of doing the show?
I mean, it is definitely a lesson in how to collaborate with people.
Yeah.
And also that it's possible to approach even very delicate or potentially discomfiting, like I said, conversations, as long as you are very open and you make yourself vulnerable and you keep yourself open to feedback and sometimes criticism.
Yeah.
And that those things are really important when you're dealing with people, and especially when you're trying to connect over something that isn't necessarily your experience, it's really important to listen. And so this has, for me personally, and I can't speak on behalf of all of the other four curators that are in my group, but I know that for me, it has been a lesson in how to be human in some ways. Yeah. And I don't mean to like make this sound kind of like mushy or pat in some way, but I feel really fortunate in the people that I've been able, the artists that I've been able to work with for this show, and for me, I just am like super impressed and honored to have had the opportunity to listen to them.
Yeah,
it's a lesson in how to be a human, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was good talking to you and catching up too at the same time. And yeah, I'm going to put up all the information about the show on the website too, and I'll be sure to Facebook it out and tweet it out.
Good. Everyone should come.
All right. Well, thanks.
Good. Thanks, Lewis.
All right. That's it for this week. I want to thank all of you for listening. I also want to thank Amanda for coming onto the podcast. It was great catching up with her in this way. Blacklight will be showing at the Wattis Institute till May 14th. To learn more about Blacklight and the events in conjunction with the show, visit the Wattis website at wattis.org, or you can like the Blacklight page on Facebook. You can also follow the exhibition on Instagram at Blacklight2017. Finally, I want to thank real quick Richard Cunning for providing the intro music, and I just want to remind everyone to be sure to subscribe to the Art Scene Podcast on iTunes and leave a comment if you like. Or you can visit the website at artscenepc.com for pictures and more. All right, till next time, everyone.